Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with revelations in the New York Times that American intelligence agents tried to buy back NSA and CIA hacking tools stolen by the so-called shadow brokers, but were instead offered dirt on Trump, cavorting with six Russian prostitutes in Moscow's Ritz Hotel. Trump has seized on this story to claim vindication, tweeting out that, quote, the Russians sold phony secrets on Trump to the U.S. It's all starting to come out now. Drain the swamp. We'll examine this bungled operation with a former CIA operations officer, Robert Baer, who is now the national security analyst for CNN, and discuss whether there is a creeping coup underway in America as Trump appears to be winning in his efforts to change the subject from investigations into him, his family, and his business activities by turning the tables with constant calls for investigations of the press, the intelligence community, Hillary Clinton, the FBI, the DOJ, and Democrats on the intelligence committees. Now that Trump has fired or forced out almost every official in the FBI and DOJ in charge of investigating him, as he sits on the Democrats' rebuttal to the phony Nunes memo, we will assess whether Trump will be able to either delay, neutralize, or shut down the Mueller inquiry. Then we will speak with the American political historian Alan Lichtman, who has studied both the American right and the presidency and is the author of the national bestseller, The Case for Impeachment, just out now in an updated version. He joins us to discuss the apparent determination, if not desperation, on Trump's part to prevent the evidence against him that Mueller has collected from seeing the light of day, and whether in terms of comparisons to Watergate, the reverse is true, that this time Trump's crimes are worse than the cover-up underway. Then finally, we'll look into whether the Iranian drone incursion into Israel and the punitive airstrikes against Iranian targets in Syria that followed the downing of an Israeli F-16 could lead to a wider escalation of the many-sided war in Syria. Asher Kaufman, director of the Kroc Institute for International Peace at the University of Notre Dame and author of Contested Frontiers, Cartography, Sovereignty, and Conflict at the Syria-Lebanon-Israel Tri-Border Region, joins us. We'll discuss Russia's fear of an escalation and the further complication that two NATO allies, Turkey and the U.S., could also be drawn into a confrontation over the Kurds. And joining us now is Robert Baer, one of the most accomplished agents in CIA history and the winner of the Career Intelligence Medal. He's the author of four New York Times bestsellers, including See No Evil and Sleeping with the Devil, How Washington Sold Our Soul for Saudi Crude. Considered one of the world's foremost authorities on the Middle East, he is the current National Security Affairs Analyst for CNN, and his latest book is The Perfect Kill, 21 Laws for Assassinations. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Baer.
Thanks, Ian. Good to be back.
Thanks, Bob. And what do you make of this New York Times story that Donald Trump is claiming vindications as a result of agents of both the NSA and the CIA tried to buy back the stolen hacking tools from the NSA and CIA that the shadow brokers supposedly grabbed, and instead they're offered dirt on Trump cavorting with six Russian prostitutes in Moscow's Ritz Hotel. Is there any, does this in any way advance the story, or does it do damage since Trump is literally crowing that somehow this is vindication?
Oh, I think it does enormous damage. What we have here is, it's called a walk-in. A Russian comes in. He makes all sorts of promises that he can get these hacking tools back, and then he drops a little bomb about Trump. And that's not why the CIA is meeting him. It looks like they gave him $100,000 to get the hacking tools back. So, I mean, to save our economy, basically, because if they turn these on the economy. And the fact that he brought up Trump stuff, and Ian, as you know as well as I, is this stuff, these rumors have been out there about prostitutes for a year and a half now. I mean, we heard them. You didn't know what to make out of them. But now Trump has this, that the CIA is spying on him, trying to do him in, which was, if the article had been better written, it wouldn't have come off that way. You know, a fact that a walk-in will come in and, you know, scattershot the whole thing is pretty usual in the business. And he looks like a fabricator to me, taking advantage of the situation to make promises. He ultimately produced nothing, so he's Trump's making a lot out of nothing. The CIA was not spying on Trump, just as the FBI was not spying on his campaign, just as the FBI did not tap his phones, and on and on. And, you know, apprentice-like Trump is spinning this, and it's paying off because you have an ignorant electorate that just you can't remember yesterday and the initial crime. And plus, there's just massive ignorance of what the FBI does and what a conservative organization it is, and it has no imagination, and the Department of Justice. And the chances there's a cabal in DOJ and the FBI framing Trump is zero, flat out zero. It just doesn't happen. I know the people involved were running this investigation at DOJ, and they didn't want to touch stuff on the Hillary Clinton Foundation. They didn't want to touch. They know better. They know how this blows up. So to go back to your point, you're absolutely right. Trump is winning the propaganda war simply because people aren't paying attention. And I think ultimately if Mueller gets into the money laundering, which, you know, doing business with Russians and cash and LLCs, you're involved in money laundering. He was involved in money laundering. But I think when it comes to that, my guess is that he will fire Mueller because everybody at the Department of Justice will be gone, and they'll put in some patsy, put a new, you know, a new investigator in, and then they'll just bury the report. They don't have to publish it. So, you know, it's hard to call this, but right now I don't think it's we're going to get the truth out of this. And yes, he is winning Trump.
Well, it's extraordinary how many people he's fired and forced out of the FBI and the DOJ. And that's not just people that come to mind like Comey and McCabe. But there's a whole bunch of other people within, lower down in the ranks of the FBI, anybody that had anything to do with Comey and the Russia investigation have been either fired or forced out. So,
and they're moving out laterally, things, you know, assignments we haven't even heard about that's being done quietly, you know, and people aren't running out to the press. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, when Fox called for a purge, you know, a Trump responded, and Sessions could not care less about what happens to DOJ and the morale or the morale of the FBI, which we know is they are out to destroy these institutions, Department of Justice, and turn this into, you know, the consiglieries of the White House.
But this is happening across the board, is it not? I mean, could you make a case that there is a kind of creeping coup underway? The State Department is a shell. As you point out, the DOJ and the FBI are being eviscerated. The press have been constantly attacked.
Right through, it's gone. They are going to dismantle the federal government in the name of deregulation and this conspiracy theory that the federal government is the deep state. Now, what's going to be interesting when the federal government is completely a shell and something happens, will anybody remember this? Because if you are smart and you're educated and you have a way out and you're an FBI agent, you take it. Every FBI agent I know, talk to, you see the writing on the wall.
Well, it's already happened. It's already happened with Rachel Brand, the number three at the DOJ. She's taken a job at Walmart.
You know, and they say good riddance as they leave. So anybody with a brain is going to leave. So, you know, when we have another attack here and the FBI is not around, you know, was it worth it for this right-wing insanity? And it's, you know, I don't even know how to describe it because I've never seen it before. This is McCarthy writ large.
And again, I'm speaking with Robert Baer, one of the most accomplished agents in CIA history and the winner of the Career Intelligence Medal. He's the author of four New York Times bestsellers, including See No Evil and Sleeping with the Devil, How Washington Sold Our Soul for Saudi Crude. Considered one of the world's foremost authorities on the Middle East, he is the current National Security Affairs Analyst for CNN, and his latest book is The Perfect Kill, 21 Laws for Assassinations. So just going back to this story in the New York Times that Trump is crowing about as though he's been vindicated. It seems to go back to the well, you could go say it goes back to Snowden, but it, let's go take the next guy that apparently got hold of all of this material, these hacking tools, Harold T. Martin III. He's a contractor. He was arrested. The FBI found in his home and in his garden shed and his car was full of agency documents and storage devices for many, many years. He had a habit of taking them home from work. It looks like he was using a Kaspersky product, and that somehow, that's the only explanation, it would seem, that how these tailored access operations, hacking tools, got into the hands of the Russians, or they call themselves the shadow brokers, but there's no question that they're the Russians. This is a massive loss. You mentioned just a minute ago in passing that what's at stake here is that thanks to this operation, and by the way, Kaspersky says that it all happened by accident, and they blame Edward Snowden for giving out the code names for all of these operations. What's your sense of what damage could be done, and do the Russians therefore hold a gun at our head because they possess these hacking tools, or have they somehow, have we survived this incident by spending an extra few billions?
Oh, we by no means survived this. And I think if you look all of the leaks out of the National Security Agency, it's hollowed out of, you know, sheer incompetence in so many ways. You know, or you even look at the, you know, the Steele report. I mean, if you had a secret, Ian, would you go to the FBI and have it risk showing up in the committees and in a bipartisan way get leaked out? I mean, people are just not going to, or Russians. Why, if there were a Russian that knew the truth about Trump, is there any conceivable way, unless he was insane, would volunteer to the Americans? And the American intelligence depends on volunteers. And it depends on the National Security Agency, and that's hollowed out. But that's one more institution that has taken a fall. And, you know, people, a lot of Americans don't consider intelligence collection a profession. They think that you can get on Instagram or get on Twitter and know everything you need to know. Well, that's not true. And you know, I'm not in the intelligence business, and I certainly know that it's incompetent in so many ways, but what would be worse is just getting rid of it altogether. And that's apparently what Trump, I mean, he doesn't read the Daily Bulletin from the CIA. They won't brief him on Russia. And the Russia house at the CIA is hollowed out, afraid, and, you know, we're blind.
So why then is Trump appearing to do Putin's job for him? What the hell is going on here?
Well, I think Trump is in finance. He's five-time bankruptcy. He laundered money for the Russians and a bunch of other people. And it's not so much that Putin is calling him up and telling him what to do and what not to do. And Putin, why would he? I mean, look, Putin has got the Middle East as far as I'm concerned. You know,
but that was handed to him in part by Obama and then by Trump.
And by Bush. You know, it's one S. So they've won.
Oh, that's right.
The Russians were dead and gone, in 1992, basically, or out of the Middle East, nothing, no arms deals, nothing, and now they're back, and they control. You know, they're deep into the oil in Iraq, Syria, of course, the air. Trump is, you know, almost at war with Turkey. I mean, that could blow up at any time. That's a NATO ally. Trump has come out and said, I don't really care about NATO. We don't need this. Trade treaties and the rest of it. He doesn't. He's an unguided missile, and they know it. So there's absolutely no point in them in calling him up and saying, you know, this American nativism and is playing right into their hands as we become more isolated.
But how did but how is Trump getting away with turning the tables, where instead of the issue being about the investigations of him and his family and his business activities, he's managed to turn the tables with this distraction where, you know, he's investigating the press or calling for investigations of the press, the FBI, the DOJ, the Democrats, Hillary Clinton. It's just a constant. And, of course, this is all being enabled by the Republicans and by Fox News.
His mentor was Roy Cohn, just a counterattack like McCarthy did. But you have to have – what stopped McCarthy was the military, the Pentagon, when he went out. But there's nobody in Washington that has the nerve to stand up to him.
Why? The guy is such a joke. I mean, what is that? Why are they afraid of this guy who's clearly a criminal, is clearly an incompetent, is clearly an ignoramus?
He's a serial liar, and it's on the record as a serial liar.
Right, but why are they afraid of him? And that's the part I don't understand. I mean, I understand that...
Ian, it's psychopathology in the American public, because why people put up with it. How women could vote for Trump or Republicans that defend abusing women, I don't understand it, and you don't understand it. But those girls were beat up by Rob Porter. I mean, the evidence is there. It's as much evidence as you'll ever get of domestic abuse. And he defends the guy. You know, I don't know. I don't know how a woman could vote for Trump. That makes no sense to me. And I'm not talking about from a Democratic or Republican perspective.
Right, but surely it's understandable why Trump is doing that, because he can't afford to turn on Rob Porter, because that would open up attacks on him, because he's basically denying that at least 12 women have come forward and said he assaulted them, and he bragged about it on the Access Hollywood tape. So I understand why Trump's doing it.
He's exhausting our critical abilities. And you just do it, pound and pound and pound, and people go, oh, whatever, and are complacent. That's what's happening. I mean, clearly he can say how many people were his inauguration. So it was the biggest ever, and we know from the photography it wasn't. And how a president can get away with that tells us more about us than him.
So are we basically destined then to become a kind of plantation economy with a bunch of oligarchs getting fatter and richer?
Think of us as heading the Philippines model with Duterte.
Well, but again, I don't understand why the law enforcement community would... Duterte depends upon the law enforcement community to enact his brutality and terror. Would our law enforcement communities and the FBI go along with a criminal in charge of the United States? I mean, that's what we have already.
There's nothing they can do about it. They can investigate. They can get to the truth. But if there's no Department of Justice to put these people in jail, you know, the money launderers around him, what can they do? And it's risky at the Department of Justice bringing a Russian case forward or anything else or anything connected with the Trumps. You know, will it be done at the state level? Will he get away with this? This is unknowable.
Well, what about then the opposition in this country? There are two layers. There's the resistance, the citizens, the millions of women that showed up the day after that bogus inauguration that was supposed to be the biggest in history, which, as you point out, the photographs tell otherwise. That's an indication. A lot of women are running for office. You mentioned earlier that how could women vote for him? Well, remember, more people voted against him than voted for him in the last election.
Yeah. Well, I tell people it's the women. You know, some people approached me to run for Congress, and it's if women could organize and say enough is enough. You simply cannot have tolerate abuse and breaking the law, and I trust women voters on this to do the right thing. And just get across and get through the. And, you know, I don't care whether Republican or Democrat or conservative or liberal. We need law and order in this country, and we have to have faith in our institutions, or it's not a country. I'm serious. If you take the FBI down, and there's no national police, what happens? It's chaos.
Well, what's extraordinary about this is I don't know whether Trump is taking the country down and attacking these democratic institutions and knocking them off one by one, which he appears to be doing, whether he's doing it, doing Putin's bidding, or whether he's doing it simply because he's a criminal and he's guilty and he doesn't want to be found out, because everything he's doing is right out of the playbook of somebody that's guilty.
Well, I mean, look, if you're in construction in New York City and you've been bankrupt five times and you run casinos, you're dealing with some tough people that have broken the law. Whether you have or not doesn't matter. And so they're ghosts in his closet. And he's worried about that. And if Mueller goes after those ghosts, he has no choice but to fire them.
Well, he's...
And that's my guess what's going to happen.
Right. And then this idea that people are going to take to the streets, do you buy that?
No, I haven't seen anybody in the streets. It's just people are just going along, and it's amusing for them. It's amusing for people. And I think the only thing that's going to really wake people up would be another collapse like in 2007, a serious recession. And he made a series of mistakes that made it much worse. And if reality set in with a lot of people, in their pocketbooks, that might change things. But that's such a, such a big guess. I don't know.
Well, on the other side, of course, he has the ability to start a little war with Iran, for example.
He can start. We're very close after the Israelis. It got an airplane shot down, probably by an Iranian surface-to-air missile. We're not that far. And the other thing is, I think it's just amazing on immigration is an issue that affects a lot of people in this country, and they have very strong. And he's just talking about it and going after the most innocent people, the Dreamers. But it's purely for show. He has no clue how to fix immigration in a fair way.
Right, but he's using it as a tool to beat up on the Democrats, to tell
his
people.
Racism.
Yeah, he's basically saying the Democrats only care about illegal immigrants, not about us Americans.
To our worst instincts. And it's got people, his base is not going away. And now they believe this tax cut is going to make their lives better and solve all their problems. And, and people, once people start dumping junk into the air and the water and start killing people in a large way, will they even remember that it was Trump that pushed this whole thing? I just don't know what people remember.
Well, Robert Baer, I wish we could end on a more hopeful note.
Oh, that wasn't a happy note? I'm sorry.
No.
But it was great, Ian.
Okay. Talk to you later. Thanks a lot. And again, I've been speaking with Robert Baer, one of the most accomplished agents in CIA history and the winner of the Career Intelligence Medal. He's the author of four New York Times bestsellers, including See No Evil and Sleeping with the Devil, How Washington Sold Our Soul for Saudi Crude, considered one of the world's foremost authorities on the Middle East. He is the current National Security Affairs Analyst for CNN, and his latest book is The Perfect Kill, 21 Laws for Assassinations. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back speaking with the author of the national bestseller, The Case for Impeachment, just out now in an updated version.
We've all seen enough now, it's time.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Alan Lichtman, one of America's most storied American political historians, who teaches at American University and has studied both the American right and the presidency. His books include White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement, and The Keys to the White House, A Surefire Way to Predicting the Next President. His prediction system has correctly predicted the outcomes of all U.S. presidential elections since 1984, including the last election, when, against all odds, he predicted a Trump victory. His latest book is a national bestseller, The Case for Impeachment, and it's just out in an updated edition. Welcome to Background Briefing, Alan Lichtman.
Thank you, Ian.
Well, thanks for joining us, Alan. And we were just speaking with a former CIA operations officer, Robert Baer, who's now the national security analyst for CNN. He's somebody that's been in, had a career in working in engineering coups. He actually had a coup against Saddam Hussein, which probably would have saved us having the Iraq War, but that was vetoed.
But that's
another story. But the point I wanted to make here, just to set up our interview, is that what he was saying was that there's a creeping coup underway in America, and Trump appears to be winning in his efforts to change the subject from investigations into him, his family, and his business activities. And he's turned the tables with these constant calls for investigations of the press, the intelligence community, Hillary Clinton, the FBI, the DOJ, and the Democrats on the Intelligence Committee. And he's fired or forced out almost every official in the FBI and the DOJ in charge of investigating him. And of course, he's sitting on the Democrats' rebuttal of the phony Nunes memo. So tell us that Trump is not winning.
I don't think Trump is winning. He certainly is winning superficially. Your guest is absolutely right. Look, Trump has a couple of great talents, none of which have anything to do with running a country properly. But one is he is a terrific showman. If you look at his State of the Union address, it was all flash, all showmanship, absolutely no substance. You know, he had this big infrastructure plan, and there were no details, nothing fleshed out about it. The second thing he is incredibly good at doing is deflection. This has been his M.O. throughout his presidency. Whenever you're in trouble, deflect to something else. Deflect to Barack Obama. The recent fall in the stock market, Barack Obama's fall. Deflect to Hillary Clinton. Deflect to this mythical deep state that is supposedly against Donald Trump. The great irony in his attack on the FBI and his claim that the FBI is bound to destroy Republicans. The FBI is a heavily conservative, heavily Republican organization. The notion that it is out to somehow do the Democrats' bidding and destroy Republicans is so counter to fact as to be astounding. But you can't, nothing is astounding for a president who, according to the fact checkers at the Washington Post, has issued lies or misleading statements about 2,200 times in the first year of his presidency. But I don't think he's ultimately winning, because I do think he can't stop the Mueller investigation. It's too late. If he was going to stop it, he had to stop it earlier. And I do think the truth will come out. And as I point out in the updated version of the case for impeachment, I believe Mueller is going to come out with some shocking findings within the next 4 or 5 months. And this will put Republicans in Congress on the spot. Either they will have to start an impeachment investigation or continue to explain away and enable this president, in which case I believe they'll be voted out of office, we'll have a Democratic Congress, and an impeachment investigation will start anyway.
Well, Alan, we're going to call you back because this is a bad reception on this phone. We're going to call you back on your cell. So just... I'll reintroduce you, and then we'll talk to you in a second here. And again, I'm speaking with Alan Lichtman, who's an American political historian who teaches at American University and has studied both the American right and the presidency. His books include White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement, and The Keys to the White House, A Surefire Way to Predicting the Next President. His prediction system has correctly predicted the outcomes of all U.S. presidential elections since 1984, including the last election, when against all odds he predicted a Trump victory. And his latest book is a national bestseller, The Case for Impeachment, and it's just out in an updated version. And there's also a very, very good article at the Daily Beast by Jonathan Alter and Nick Ackerman. And Nick Ackerman was on one of the investigators on the Watergate Committee, a former federal prosecutor. The article's called "This Time the Crime is Worse than the Cover-Up." So that is something that I'd highly recommend in terms of the case that Alan's making. And Alan, I was just referring to an article in the Daily Beast by Jonathan Alter and Nick Ackerman, a former federal prosecutor who was on the Watergate investigation. "This Time the Crime is Worse than the Cover-Up." And they make a very good case that this is kind of the reverse of Watergate, that the crime is worse than the cover-up, and that the crime essentially is that through General Flynn and the Russians, a deal was made essentially that you guys help us destroy Hillary Clinton with all the dirt that you have on her from the hacking by Russian intelligence and using WikiLeaks, etc. And in exchange, when we get in, we'll relieve you of the sanctions. And that, you know, if that's the case, that's treason, isn't it?
I have argued it is treason. I have been attacked for that. I argue in my book that it's allegedly treason. I've been attacked on the grounds that constitutionally, and treason is the only constitutional crime, and it carries the death penalty, that you can't have treason unless a foreign power is levying war against the United States. And I point out in the book and in other venues that, in fact, Russia was levying war against the United States. Maybe not a war with bombs and bullets, but the modern kind of warfare. That is a cyber attack designed to undermine and subvert our democracy. This is modern warfare. It is even now a new doctrine in the Russian general staff, and I quote this in the updated version of the case for impeachment, that they understand that modern warfare is cyber warfare, and this is what the Russians are now going to be doing. And even the intelligence community in the Trump administration has admitted that the Russians aren't done, that they are still undermining our democracy. They are coming back with a vengeance. They may even hack into voting machines this time. And what is the Trump administration doing about it? Absolutely nothing. Instead, they're talking about phony voter fraud. They had this voter fraud commission that worked for 8 months and couldn't come up with any voter fraud, and it had to be dissolved. It's just astounding. The Russians, it's the Russians who are winning. Vladimir Putin is laughing in his vodka in the Kremlin. Everything he could have hoped for and more is now occurring within the United States. And what price has he paid? Zero. Trump wouldn't even implement the sanctions that Congress voted better than 95% for, broad bipartisan support. He wouldn't even implement those sanctions. Vladimir Putin is the big winner here. And that is just extraordinary.
Well, the fact, though, Alan Lichtman, that Trump has already fired or forced out almost every official in the FBI and the DOJ in charge of investigating him, and now Rachel Brand, the number three, has quit. Apparently, according to Bob Baer, he talks to a lot of his former colleagues in the FBI, and they say they're just getting out. Their morale is terrible, and Trump has basically destroyed the morale. Doesn't this clear the path for Trump to either, you know, delay or neutralize the Mueller investigation or even fire Mueller? I mean,
I think,
go ahead.
It's possible, but it's, remember, Mueller's been working now for about 9 months. I imagine that he has already accumulated enough damning information on Donald Trump to well justify naming him as an unindicted conspirator, as they did in the Nixon case, and certainly more than enough to begin impeachment proceedings or to fundamentally threaten the survival of Republicans in Congress. I am not one of those who believes that at this point it's really going to be possible to thwart the Mueller investigation. But I'm willing to admit that maybe I'm being too optimistic. I have to say, I agree with you. This president would stop at nothing to protect himself because all he cares about is himself. He doesn't care about the country. He doesn't care about the rule of law. He doesn't care about protecting and preserving institutions. He doesn't care about morality. He takes no personal responsibility for anything that he's done. He totally contradicts all of the so-called tenets of the quote-unquote Republican Party of morality. So nothing that he does will surprise me, but things may be too far along. The locomotive may have gotten too much steam to stop it at this point.
Well, if he were to somehow either neutralize or delay or the report or even fire Mueller, is there any way to get it out? Because if it doesn't come out officially, it's not going to carry the same weight. And that's what concerns me, is that you really have to have a very strong case here, because you've got Fox News and right-wing media out there telling Trump's side of the story, which is this idea that the whole thing's a hoax. All those well-armed people out there in the right wing, and by the way, the right wingers, I get all these right wing solicitations all the time to interview these crackpots, and they are going wild talking about the musical chairs at the DOJ. They know every last official in the chain of command that may end up. So they're already proactively talking about how Trump can get rid of Mueller.
Well, I think they would love to see that happen. That would be the ultimate test of whether the Republican Party has completely gone down the rat hole of immorality and treason. I think it is treason with Donald Trump or not. If he fires Mueller or fires Rosenstein and then replaces him with some flunky who is going to shut down the investigation, there are things Congress could do, as they did after the Saturday night massacre under Richard Nixon. And so this would really be the test of the Republican Party and whether we still have a constitutional republic in the United States. It's incredibly frightening. And again, the man in the Kremlin is just laughing and smiling. He pulled off the greatest intelligence coup in the history of the world. And Donald Trump is nothing more than his flunky. That's so obvious.
Well, Alan Lichtman, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Anytime, Ian. Take care.
Thank you, and take care. And again, I've been speaking with Alan Lichtman, who's an American political historian, who teaches at American University, has studied both the American right and the presidency. His books include White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement, and The Keys to the White House, a surefire way to predicting the next president. His prediction system has correctly predicted the outcomes of all U.S. presidential elections since 1984, including the last election when, against all odds, he predicted a Trump victory. And his latest book is a national bestseller, The Case for Impeachment, and it's just out in an updated version. We're going to take a brief station break and back looking into whether the Iranian drone incursion into Israel and the punitive airstrikes against Iranian targets in Syria that followed the downing of an Israeli F-16 could lead to a wider escalation of the many-sided war in Syria. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Usher Kaufman, who's a director of the Kroc Institute for International Peace and a professor of history and peace studies at the University of Notre Dame. Prior to that, he taught at Hebrew University in Jerusalem. And from 2000 to 2004, he was a research fellow at the Harry S. Truman Research Institute for the Advancement of Peace, and he headed its Middle East unit. Usher Kaufman is the author of Reviving Phoenicia, The Search for Identity in Lebanon, A History of Modern Lebanese National Identity. And his latest book is Contested Frontiers, Cartography, Sovereignty, and Conflict at the Syria-Lebanon-Israel Tri-Border Region. Welcome to Background Briefing, Usher Kaufman.
Thank you for having me, Ian.
And Usher, it does seem that there's conflict in this tri-border region. An Iranian drone ventured in from Syria into Israel. It was shot down by an Israeli attack helicopter, and then that prompted an Israeli raid on a number of targets, Iranian targets, we're told, of the Quds Force, and an Israeli F-16 fighter jet was shot down and crashed in northern Israel. So at this point, Israel is saying they don't want to escalate, but as you know, Israel and Iran are mortal enemies. So could this thing get out of hand?
Yeah, it could easily get out of hand. I mean, it seems like that this round has calmed down. Statements from Israel and from Iran indicate that there's not going to be continuity of this round. But it's very clear that we are seeing out something that could easily happen again and on a much larger scale. Too much at stake is involved, and the Syrian civil war is taking yet another turn that may involve now Israel and potentially direct confrontation between Israel and Iran.
Well, this has certainly got the Russians worried. Apparently, Prime Minister Netanyahu has been on the phone with Vladimir Putin, and Putin has called for restraint. And I understand that there's a deconfliction agreement between the Israelis and the Russians, but there's not a lot of airspace over Syria. So if you're going after Iranian targets in Syria, you're pretty close to Russian bases in Latakia. So,
right. Yeah, I mean, that's very clearly one risk. The other risk is that from a Russian perspective is the Assad regime. I mean, Russia has entered the war with a very clear aim of making sure that the regime survives. And an Israeli involvement on a mass scale could easily destabilize the regime. Israel is not one of these small militias that has no genuine capability to stabilize the regime. And so the entire project of Russian involvement could be challenged by an Iranian-Israeli confrontation in Syria. So Russia has a lot at stake here to make sure that this round ends and that stability and an attempt to minimize the possibility of an Iranian-Israeli confrontation in Syria.
Well, of course, when you say stability in Syria, it's a little ironic, isn't it? I mean, we've had the worst couple of weeks of violence there in Syria with the Assad forces pounding rebel positions in just in the outskirts of Damascus itself.
Yeah, I agree. Wrong choice of words.
Yeah, well, and then on top of that, the U.S. apparently U.S. position was attacked by Assad's forces, and they used air power to kill a lot of Assad's forces, and Assad was upset about that, obviously. But when you talk about a possible confrontation, a large scale confrontation between Iran and Israel, there's also the possibility of a confrontation between the United States and Turkey over Turkish incursions into Kurdish-controlled areas of Syria. So both of the Russia and the U.S. could really get into a quagmire.
Right, you're right. And probably with a different regime,
in the United States, we would have been able to make some intelligent assessments or judgments about what is happening and what might happen. But with this current government in the United States, it's very challenging to tell what are American interests and what it would actually be willing to do in order to pursue them in this in Syria. On a broader perspective, there is no question that the United States has given up on Syria. On the other hand, it's very clear that some of its interests are still there in the Kurdish regions, the northern parts of Syria, northwest and northeast. Both regions have been supported by the United States and have now led to a potential confrontation between Kurdish units supported by the United States and the Turkish military.
And again, I'm speaking with Asher Kaufman, who's a director of the Kroc Institute for International Peace and a professor of history and peace studies at the University of Notre Dame. Prior to that, he taught at Hebrew University in Jerusalem. And from 2000 to 2004, he was a research fellow at the Harry S. Truman Research Institute for the Advancement of Peace, where he headed up its Middle East unit. His latest book is Contested Frontiers, Cartography, Sovereignty, and Conflict at the Syria-Lebanon-Israel tri-border region. Well, talking of the Trump administration's indifference to the Syria situation, I mean, one of the first things that Trump did was to cut off the funding for the Free Syrian Army, which was essentially a gift to Putin, where everybody's puzzled about what the ties are between Trump and Russia and why at every turn he gives Putin a break. But it does seem, though, in terms of the U.S. boots on the ground with the Kurds, who've proven to be the only reliable boots on the ground in terms of taking on the Islamic State, at this point where you've got the U.S. and Turkey in a possible shootout, there's a real possibility of a confrontation. Surely the only winners in this situation are the Islamic State, even though it's being pounded and broken up. It would seem that the Turks' involvement is taking the eye off the ball. Is that your understanding?
I mean, it's difficult to tell what is left of the Islamic State. Newspaper accounts tell us that they have been dispersed all over the region, that they lost, in fact, their central geographical hold in northeast Syria and northern Iraq. I think that the biggest benefactor of it all right now is still Russia. So long as the Assad regime stays in hold of Damascus, then Russia benefits from the continued chaos in the periphery. So if actually, there is some confrontation between Turkey and the United States in northern Syria that could play well for Russian interests.
Well, of course, the irony is that for all of Erdogan's protestations about the so-called Kurdish terrorists and the U.S. aiding and abetting terrorists, the Turks have been the ones that have really aided and abetted terrorism. They're the ones that through the Turkish intelligence service, the MEK, they set up this underground railroad that had all these jihadis coming in to Turkey, then making their way into Syria. And now we're learning that as the Islamic State is broken up, many of their fighters are fleeing through Turkey, many of them dressed right as women. So, you know, the role of Turkey in this has always been rather dubious. But of course, if the U.S. and Turkey start slugging it out, and it's pretty hard to believe that two NATO members could actually go to war, then clearly Russia would be the beneficiary.
Right, right. No, I agree with your analysis, and I hope that, I'm sure that negotiations or some kind of diplomatic exchange now between Turkey and United States officials to make sure that it does not happen. Because it's not in their interest, actually, to go to war against each other.
Right, but the United States is led by a mercurial, incompetent president who knows little to nothing about foreign relations, except, you know, where he has business investments, and he does have business investments in Turkey. And on the Turkish side, you've got an egomaniacal narcissist as well in Erdogan. And my understanding is that the essentially General Mattis, the Secretary of Defense, has a lot of autonomy, and he's the one that's basically telling Trump that we got to keep a foothold in this part of the world. Otherwise, the entire U.S. investment in Iraq and in Syria, which is massive, amounting to trillions of dollars, will be lost. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, that's my understanding. It's one of these issues that have been discussed now time and again with regards to Trump and the adults in the room. Supposedly, the generals who actually run the day-to-day operations of the U.S. Empire, including General Mattis now. So on the one hand, he's clearly hawkish in its approach towards U.S. military presence in Iraq and Syria, whatever is left of it. On the other hand, I do see him as a very rational player who would not be interested in direct confrontation with the Turks.
So getting back to the other confrontation that is equally likely, if not more likely, and that is Israel and Iran. Iran, for all intents and purposes, seems to have succeeded in what was referred to by King Hussein of Jordan as the Shia Crescent. That seems to have largely become a reality where you have a direct land link, if you will, from Tehran all the way to Damascus into Beirut, because essentially the real winners of the Iraq war were the Iranians. Let's just start with that. Is that an established fact that they've got that corridor now?
I think, in theory, if you look at the map, then it definitely looks like that, and that Iraq was able to establish this land corridor between Tehran and Beirut. I think in practice it's more challenging to actually exercise or use that kind of corridor to physically move troops and supplies from Tehran to Beirut. But there is no doubt that Iran has had the upper hand right now, at least following the Syrian civil war. Assad is in control of Damascus. He's in control of the vast majority of its population. Hezbollah has been empowered as a result of the civil war. It's not that the war is over, but there is no doubt that both Iran and Hezbollah have had the upper hand in this war, and they have achieved many of their strategic and tactical goals. So, and this is what agitates Israel so much, that the concern that that kind of Iranian/Hezbollah victory is going to change the rules of the game between Israel and Hezbollah and even Iran. For instance, the question of Israel's free use of both Syria and Lebanon's airspace. That has been an established fact since the 1980s. Israel controls the airspace of both countries, Lebanon and Syria. With Iranians' involvement now and the stabilization of the Syrian regime, Syrian airspace is now may not be as open to Israel as it used to be. So I think one of the reasons for the confrontation from 2 days ago, and one of the major issues of concern is that, from an Israeli perspective.
Well, just in the last couple of minutes, then, there is pushback in Russia against the Syrian war and the expense, and there was a Russian pilot that was shot down, and apparently he shot himself before he was captured by the jihadis, but the people in Russia, they don't have a say because it's a dictatorship and the media is totally controlled by Putin. But apparently they're not thrilled about wasting money on these foreign adventures. And most of all, in Iran, apparently the budget was somehow published and the Iranian people were upset. That explains the recent demonstrations, that they realized how much money was going to the Quds and the IRGC, the Revolutionary Guards, and how much the mullahs were stealing the country blind. But they were also upset about the Iranian involvement in Syria and Lebanon, and there were, you know, chants in the streets like, stop taking care of the Palestinians, start taking care of us. So do you think that could be a factor if Iran gets bogged down in Syria? Because both Iran and Russia, they may have a victory, but who the hell's going to pay for the reconstruction of Syria? And I can't believe that the Europeans and the Americans would pony up if the Russians and the Iranians don't take responsibility.
Right. Well, with regards to the reconstruction of Syria, I have a feeling that the Chinese would be happy to step in and pick up the job. But that's, you know, speculation on my part. But it's a big question whether internal domestic discontent in Russia or in Iran could change the foreign policies of both countries. And I think if both countries were more on the spectrum of democratic regimes, we could have spoken more seriously about that, of the ability of the masses actually to change foreign policy. I'm more doubtful in the case of Iran and Russia that is a possibility, at least in the current configuration of their political systems, that, as you said, maybe in Russia even more than in Iran, the government controls the media and would not allow real serious opposition to rise against these foreign ambitions now, as they have been taking place under the regime of Putin.
Right, and if the U.S., there are certainly rumors suggesting that the Trump administration or the elements within it want to go to war against Iran, that would also be a gift to the Iranian regime, which is deeply unpopular in the country, but they control the country and they control the militias, the religious police, etc.
Yep.
So that's another shoe that could drop.
Trump is no question a gift to the conservative elements of Iran and Russia.
Well, Asher Kaufman, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
And again, I've been speaking with Asher Kaufman, who's a director of the Kroc Institute for International Peace and a professor of history and peace studies at the University of Notre Dame. Prior to that, he taught at Hebrew University in Jerusalem. And from 2000 to 2004, he was a research fellow at the Harry S. Truman Research Institute for the Advancement of Peace, where he headed up its Middle East unit. And his latest book is Contested Frontiers, Cartography, Sovereignty, and Conflict at the Syria-Lebanon-Israel Tri-Border Region. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. We can contact me and scroll down the right-hand side and sign up for iTunes podcasts. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.